I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Appreciate you joining me today. It's Friday. We put another week in the books. We will do what we do every Friday next hour. 10 o'clock, we will get into False Flag Friday. We'll take a look at what's going on in Ukraine. There's a great clip I've got of Aaron Matei explaining how the Democrats get duped, how they've really gotten duped into wars and putting up with things. The left used to be substantially better than the right when it came actually to the wars. It was one of the only things the left really was better at, had a better record on. Another thing I'm going to mention in the first hour, but it's a good clip from Aaron Matei, and he's a progressive guy, so he's taking on his own side. So we'll take a look at that, and then we will do our chronicling of the world's descent into madness at the end of the show with This Week on the Crazy Train. First hour today, we can do Friday Fight Club if you want to. I don't take a whole lot of calls, but on Friday mornings I try to take some. So if you want to slam the Libertarian Party. I played the clip on Tuesday, extended. It took me about an hour and a half to break it down, of Dennis Prager saying that the Libertarian Party is the tool of the left and should be opposed. He was very condescending about it. There's some truth to the fact that Libertarian Party can be a spoiler in some things, but we also recounted the fact that in the 2016 elections, the Libertarian Party might have been the reason that Donald Trump got elected, because it pulled voters away from Hillary Clinton as well. So anyway, if you want to call in on that today, I did not take calls that day and several tried to come in. So you can talk about that. Or I've got a controversial topic in a second that I'll get to that you may disagree with me on too, that you're welcome to call in on. Quotes of the day today is George Orwell wrote, "If people cannot write well, they cannot think well. And if they cannot think well, others will do their thinking for them." Writing is a lost art. I'm one of the things I'm most proud of my son about. He's a big writer. He's an English major. He's a very, very good writer. It's interesting to watch his style. Sometimes I have to read his stuff twice. It's deeper. I was the editor of the school paper back when I was a kid. We did a lot of writing. I wrote a column for the Northside Sun when I was in junior high here. I can't remember even what it was about. I think it might have been kind of reporting on the schools and stuff, but writing is becoming a lost art. We've got a situation now I've noticed in dealing with young kids over the past couple of years. Young kids can't write, and I don't mean they don't know how to put together a piece of fiction or a book report. I mean they can't write. Kids these days do not even have signatures, many of them, because they don't ever have to write. This isn't really a knock on them, but everything's done on a laptop now, and their handwriting has gone to hell. It took me till I was 30 or 40 for my handwriting to go to hell, but our kids are not really learning how to put pen to paper. Kind of an interesting phenomenon. And then there was just this quote from a group called Positivity of Life. It says, "It's fine to celebrate celebrate success, but it is more important to heed the lessons of failure." And that'll get me into my first topic here, if you want to weigh in. For those of you who have been supporting the war on drugs for the past 50 years, and this is going to be pretty harsh, I can tell before I even get it out of my mouth. Can you please stop whining about fentanyl? Headlines almost every single day, the most recent one is, as we head into Halloween season, authorities in California have issued a warning to parents ahead of Halloween celebrations after approximately 12,000 fentanyl pills packaged in several popular candy boxes were seized at Los Angeles International Airport. We said Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department said, quote, with Halloween approaching, parents need to make sure they are checking their kids' candy and not allowing them to eat anything until it's been inspected by them. If you find anything in candy boxes that you believe might be narcotics, do not touch it and immediately notify your local law enforcement agency. And we're treated to fentanyl headlines on a daily basis. Implication is, you know, China's providing this fentanyl. It's coming across our borders. For the people who have supported this drug war, and this includes law enforcement and anybody else inside the machine, this is a crisis you created. See, the war on drugs and its execution over the past, particularly the last 50 years, is responsible for fentanyl being on our streets and every single death that comes with it. I see headlines every single day. They seized enough fentanyl today to kill every single American. I believe this was a headline of a couple of weeks ago when I was away. Because this stuff is so incredibly potent. And the war on drugs is what created this. There is something called the Iron Law of Prohibition. And essentially what it says is that anytime you outlaw something and force it to be smuggled, they will seek to make it as potent as possible to carry in the smallest possible container. And the illustration always is when people were not allowed to drink in sports stadiums, they didn't sneak in. Even if they were a beer drinker, if they wanted to have a drink in the stands, they couldn't sneak in a 12-pack of beer. Too big. Be confiscated. You can't get away with it. So what they would do is go for hard liquor. They would go for a more potent, small flask of hard liquor. And this is what happens whenever you prohibit drugs. The same thing happened, and fentanyl is much like what happened in Prohibition. You don't hear of a lot of people in the country right now dying of alcohol poisoning in terms of just the quality of a product. Now, some people do drink themselves to death. There's no doubt about that. We hear stories of college kids who are hazed or have never really had drinks before and they overdo it and it can actually kill them. You can certainly drink too much alcohol in a sitting. But we don't hear of deadly alcohol itself. Jim Beam's not putting out anything that is going to kill their customer. But this war on drugs has created fentanyl, and my thinking is just, can we stop whining about it? I mean, it's a tragedy. I'm disgusted by it. But I understand what creates it. It is the drug war. And if you are a drug war supporter, because you have been properly propagandized to that if we didn't make this, that the politicians are just such special people that they can determine what you can and can't put in your body. High fructose corn syrup, knock yourselves out. Alcohol, you can do it. Cigarettes, go ahead. Marijuana, no. The politicians get together and tell you what you can and can't put in your body. And this is another area where the left typically has been better than the right on these things. Now, a lot of the right thinks it's just because they're a bunch of degenerate hippie drug takers. And in some cases, that may be the case. And you can come up here and P-test me right now. I'm not advocating for the use of drugs. But fentanyl is a consequence of the drug war. If you had companies providing anything from heroin to cocaine to marijuana, it wouldn't be deadly. We're not worried about Everclear being snuck into kids' candy because they don't have to smuggle Everclear. Are you familiar with what Everclear is? It's basically pure alcohol, but it's sold in package stores. And people abuse it. There's no really redeeming feature of Everclear. And I had my fair share of it in college. I know of what I speak. But we allow it. And people make their punches and things like that. But we're not scared that our kids might just get their hands on it because people are out there in the black market trying to smuggle Everclear in a little box. So we should have learned the lessons. And I'm back to my quote. It's fine to celebrate success, but it is more important to heed the lessons of failure. The lesson of failure is the prohibition of the 1920s, where people died, gang violence came out, and we finally realized and did a retreat and said, this isn't working. This is actually making the problem. People aren't not drinking anymore during prohibition. People still drank, but it was more dangerous to drink, and there was gang violence on top of it. So the social ills that they were seeking to address by outlawing alcohol actually didn't address the problem of alcohol consumption and just added on a bunch of dangerous things like poison, alcohol, and gang violence. And now we're 50 years in this, and we do this. Now, the police are not going to tell you this. They want you to think that they're heroes for taking this stuff off the streets, and there's some degree of that. Obviously, fentanyl is incredibly dangerous, and it's killing people, but it would be nice if they would just admit that their approach to the war on drugs for the past 50 years is actually what created the fentanyl crisis in the first place. And I'm just not sure how long it's going to take us to wake up on this issue. So you can certainly be horrified by this substance that is among us that is so deadly, that is killing people and putting our children at risk, putting all kinds of people at risk. Apparently, if you get anywhere near this stuff, it sounds like it's incredibly dangerous. But just knowing, if you can understand these things, if you can learn some level of common sense, some level of history, and understand that it is the approach we have taken towards drugs that has created fentanyl in the first place. It wouldn't even be a thing. First thing the war on drugs seemed to create that was really a catastrophe was crystal meth. Because you couldn't go and just somebody who wanted to alter their consciousness couldn't go somewhere and buy something. So they said, well, I don't know, maybe if we take some floor cleaner and some Sudafed or whatever the hell else goes into this chemical cocktail that is crystal meth. They started creating it in mobile homes in the desert. But people need to understand this. When you see the scare stuff about fentanyl, just understand this was actually created by the war on drugs. It's not the reason to ramp up the war on drugs. Get rid of the war on drugs. Nobody's going to be searching for anything with any fentanyl in it. I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians.
Well, when it comes to our ruling class making stupid decisions with horrible consequences, we were treated to the main headline on that yesterday when the CDC did go ahead and add or recommend the addition of the COVID vaccines to the childhood immunization schedule. And it's strange. I mean, they must not have read my comment on the subject. we pretty much knew that this is what was going to happen. But I've got some pretty interesting news on it. It's a real tragedy. And we have to remember, though, a lot of people are rightfully concerned, does this mean that for my child to go to school, they're going to have to get this COVID shot every single year? Mississippi has already passed a law forbidding the requirement of these shots to attend schools. We'll see if this addition by the CDC doesn't attack that law in the next legislative session. But so far, right now, your kids are going to be fine. You do not have to take this shot. But it's not about your kids' health anyway. And I've played this clip before, but I want to make sure people totally understand where this is. The pharmaceutical companies want to target all of your children down to 6 months old. They're not going to leave any money on the table. They want to make sure that they pick your pockets and enrich themselves. It doesn't matter the cost. But it's not even really about forcing every school-age child to take this shot. It is simply about this, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Explained to us. As I say, I've played this clip before, but in light of this new ruling, we have to understand the motivation behind the CDC just rubber stamping this thing, because the CDC is just a handmaiden, a sales organization for the pharmaceutical companies. They're not a regulator. They're not a protector of the American people. They're a bunch of hacks funded by Big Pharma and trying to protect Big Pharma. This is the reason it was added to the CDC schedule.
Well, they have to give it to kids because here's why. They cannot market this vaccine without having immunity shield. I sue pharmaceutical companies for a living. And I have enough criminal activity that I know about Pfizer at this point and Moderna. That if they went ahead and marketed a vaccine where they end up killing people or injuring them, and I can sue them, well, they'd be through. So they're never going to market a vaccine allow people access to a vaccine, an approved vaccine, without getting liability protection. Now, the emergency use authorization vaccines have liability protection under the PrEP Act and the CARES Act. So as long as you take an emergency use, you can't sue them. Once they get approved, now you can sue them, unless they can get it recommended for children.
What?
Because all vaccines that are recommended, officially recommended for children, get liability protection, even if an adult gets that vaccine. That's why they're going after kids. They know this is going to kill and injure a huge number of children, but they need to do it for the liability protection. And here's how they know that it's going to injure kids. During the Pfizer study, they only tested it on 1,300 children. And one of those we now know was a girl called Maddie Gary. And we only know about this because she and her family came forward and told us what happened. Maddie Gary got the vaccine. She immediately went into seizures. She is now in a wheelchair for life, and she needs a feeding tube to eat. So because Pfizer only tested on 1,300 kids, it is stuck with the extrapolation. And one out of every 1,300 kids is going to be injured like that, an injury worse than death. Pfizer did not report her injury. Instead, it said she had a stomach ache. So that's what they reported to the FDA. They lied.
Yeah. So this is about protecting Big Pharma. Says they know. And so everybody who says, well, why would they recommend this? They know it doesn't stop contraction of COVID. They know it doesn't stop the spread. What could be the, because every other shot on the childhood schedule, which I disagree with, but at least they've gone through the studies to say, by inoculating our children to attend school, we're going to stop these diseases because these are actually vaccinations that confer some level of immunity. They know that's not the case with the COVID shot. So it's not about protecting the children. Has absolutely nothing to do with that. And I'm going to show you in just a second, it's the exact opposite of that. But it's not about controlling COVID in our schools. This is just to protect the pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits going forward. There was recently the story about this poor kid. I think he was 18 years old. He was a singer. He was at a choral event. Now, where we see these athletes that have been keeling over on the field, NBA referees passing out in the middle of a game. We've seen all of these stories. The last count I saw, and it's been months ago, was something like 720 of these stories of athletes collapsing on the field or in the training rooms or in locker rooms or things like this. This kid was singing. He was at a choral event. And he basically passed out, taken to the hospital, and died. And there's no indication. I've not seen anything. I started to look it up real quick before I came on air, and I ran out of time. I don't know that this was vaccine, but it is odd. People don't usually just keel over and die. A healthy kid. I saw an interview with the mom, and she said, oh, they checked him out. His organs were fine. Everything was fine. He just died. Now, that's very unusual. Well, I've talked about it before. One of my fraternity brothers died in a flag football game for an undiagnosed heart condition. These things happen. This was long before COVID or mRNA vaccines. They do happen, but not at this rate. Some kids singing at a choir. And what was really bizarre, but I was actually at Kroger yesterday shopping. And we've got a television on right by the pharmacy showing the news. And I was a little bit down the aisle, but I heard them starting to talk about the story about this kid. And so I walked over to the screen. The pharmacy, for some reason, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday afternoon was closed, which might be good for me because I might have said something to them. It was just kind of surreal watching this story about this young man who died at a choir event. Watched this story about him dying, a perfectly healthy 18-year-old kid just dying right next to the counter of the Kroger pharmacy that pushes this vaccine on kids. It was really quite gross to watch. But the vaccine, of course, was not mentioned in the story. The parents, and they're recounting, their tearful recounting of their child who has just recently passed away completely unexpected. They didn't mention anything about the shot, and I'm sure that even if they questioned the doctors about it, the doctors assured them it had nothing to do with that. Now, I don't know if this kid even had the shot. I'm not saying that's what this is, but we're seeing these problems with our kids, and when I come back, you want to talk about some other consequences of this. And I'm going to play these things because there are parents still out there considering it. You're going to be, we're heading into the fall, right? Oh, yeah. Expecting another surge. We got another variant, the XBB or something like this. They've come up with a new one. So you're going to be constantly under pressure when you take your kids to the pediatrician's office. And now that the CDC has signed off on this thing for kids, putting it on the childhood schedule, your pediatricians, who don't think for themselves, they believe that the CDC is this all-knowing body of protection and love for the American people. A lot of pediatricians out there are going to say, well, the CDC recommends this for kids, so we recommend this for kids. Because they've outsourced every bit of their thinking to these horrific, corrupt bodies at the governmental level. So you need to know. But there's two stories out right now. Yet the mainstream media will certainly never tie to this vaccination program. So I will. We'll do it when I come back. Stick around.
Well, it wouldn't been, couldn't been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. This edition... The recommendation to add the COVID shot to the childhood schedule is a crime against our children. You really need to see the real Anthony Fauci if you've not seen this. It's available for free for the next 10 days, but I'm going to pay for it when it comes out under a paywall because I want to support the people who are trying to wake people up about this, particularly parents, to understand. I mean, When this whole thing kicked off, when Operation Warp Speed was even announced, that they were targeting these mRNA platform for these shots, there were a lot of scientists, including eminent virologists and immunologists, people with the WHO, that were jumping up and down saying, hey, they've tested these things before on ferrets. And I'm not energetic enough probably to go back and find out when I first came across this, when I first mentioned it. But I would imagine it was during the summer of 2020 as they were talking about rushing out a vaccine in this mRNA platform. What happened with the ferrets was they inoculated the ferrets with an mRNA vaccine for some particular disease. This was before COVID was even around. And they got a huge antibody response from them. And they thought, wow, look at that. This thing's going to work great. And they thought they really had a home run. This was this might have been early 2000s. I can't remember the date. I should know that. I don't know that. But they thought, lots of high fives when they started testing the antibody levels in these ferrets. And they thought, this is just fantastic. Then they put the ferrets back out and just let them kind of mingle around. And then they got the wild virus, and a bunch of them got really sick, and many of them died. And it stopped that trial in its tracks. It didn't go any further. They realized they needed to keep tinkering because something arose called antibody-dependent enhancement. And what this means is essentially you may get some antibodies to the targeted disease, but it may leave you vulnerable to a bunch of other diseases, and you're going to get a worse case of the other diseases than you normally would have because you have hypercharged your immune system towards this one particular thing, leaving it vulnerable to everything else. And myself and the other local hosts here at WYAB, you didn't hear anything about that on any of the other WGOP radio stations, but here we really kind of focused in on that and said, hey, maybe time for a little caution here. This antibody-dependent enhancement was coming from people like Robert Malone, one of the inventors of the mRNA platform, a guy with Pfizer. Can't remember the guy who was actually with the WHO was talking about this. They were all warning us about that. We didn't listen. But it sure seems like maybe they were onto something. Here is a recent story from just a couple of days ago.
Tonight, the CDC says the flu season is off to an early start. Their data shows a rash of flu-like cases reported in Texas, parts of the Southeast, New York City, and right here in D.C. And we know it's going to get worse. Australia already went through their season, the worst in 5 years. Well, in San Diego, one high school is just inundated with cases. Here's CBS's Carter Evans.
Okay, so let's just listen to what's happened in San Diego, California.
The outbreak at Patrick Henry High started Monday, doubled by Wednesday, and now more than half of the 2,600 students here are out.
I have never seen this many cases in so few days.
Dr. Howard Terrace is the district physician.
How can so many kids get sick at the same time?
There was a homecoming dance and game the weekend prior to this Monday.
And there's never been a homecoming game and a dance ever before in the history. So that must explain why they're seeing these increasing rates. I mean, as he said, I've never seen so many kids get sick so fast.
You'd think that it would take several days for them to become infectious to others, but it didn't.
Pre-pandemic, there were 36 million cases of flu, but with masking and social distancing, cases plummeted to just thousands, the lowest ever recorded. Now most mandates are gone.
Why are so many people getting the flu so early this year?
The last 2 years, people haven't been exposed to much influenza, so their immunity to it may be down, which is why it's especially important to get vaccinated right now before flu season starts to peak.
And the CDC says it's safe to get the flu shot and COVID booster together. So you can be prepared for what's predicted to be a severe flu season that's already here.
San Diego School. Now, this is a story from April. About 66% of children ages 12 to 17 are fully vaccinated against COVID-19 in California. Got to be a coincidence. Now, there could be some merit to what they say, and this is one of the weird things. You know, there's almost always an argument. The kids were not exposed to things that you ripped their lives away from, and you kept them away. This is one of those things where I try to convince people, quit living in these sterile bubbles, people who just hyper-use anti-germ, you know, you're constantly using Germ-X, or you're trying to seal yourself off from every possible pathogen everywhere. And particularly during COVID, we saw people wiping down everything with Clorox constantly. Living in a sterile bubble is not healthy for you. It leaves you susceptible to some other things. So there may be a little something to that. But this idea of antibody-dependent enhancement, could that possibly be why they just saw kids get sick earlier in the year and faster than ever, doing just normal things? When we know now that 66% of kids in the California high schools are vaccinated. If that's not enough, we also have been treated to this headline just today. This is just today. Physicians are reporting unseasonably high numbers of respiratory illnesses in children, straining many children's hospitals before the typically busier winter months. Juan Salazar, physician-in-chief at Connecticut Children's Medical Center in Hartford, said a sharp increase in cases of respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, has filled up hospital beds at his facility, creating a capacity issue. Officials at the 187-bed Children's Hospital are now considering setting up a field hospital outside the hospital's main facilities in the event of the surge of cases gets worse. RSV typically peaks in December, one of the news stories said. But now it's in October, and they're seeing record numbers of RSV. Would be pretty interesting to know if they ever did a study to find out all these kids who contracted the flu, had they been inoculated for COVID? Because ADE is a scientifically recognized issue with vaccinations, antibody-dependent enhancement. It's scientifically recognized. It's not controversial. It's something that's known to have happened before and been a concern before. Now we've decided it's not a concern, but we're seeing these huge spikes in flu and now RSV. There was there's a clip, and I couldn't really get the real Anthony Fauci movie. I got to go through a few hoops to get into it and sign up and stuff like that. And I didn't want to do that on the station computer, to be honest with you. And what was interesting, and I don't know if this is a conspiracy, but I was trying to find it on my laptop. I had watched The Real Anthony Fauci yesterday, and so I went into my history to see if I could just find the link to the video. I couldn't find it anywhere. It was not in my history. If you look at my history on my computer, because I do so much research for the show and some work that I do outside of the show, I'm all over the internet. There's just lines and lines and lines of things I visited, but I could not find the link to the real Anthony Fauci. Now, it might have been embedded in something that I didn't recognize, very possible of that, but I couldn't find it anyway. There is a clip in this real Anthony Fauci thing. I will try to get it because it stunned even me. When I saw this real Anthony Fauci movie, and to be honest with you, one of the reasons that I haven't even read the book, while I should, because I want to support Robert F. Kennedy, he's been doing fantastic work for many, many, many years. But it's almost a preaching to the choir thing. I almost seek out things that I think I might disagree with to see if I can learn anything or be surprised by any information. And sometimes things that I know I'm on board with, I don't give them the time that I should. So I haven't read the book, but I did watch this movie. There is a clip in this movie where it is an old Anthony Fauci clip. And I'm going to have to paraphrase it because I don't have the clip at my fingertips right now. But this is basically what he said. He was talking about some vaccine. I don't remember if it was swine flu or AIDS or what it was. But here's how he recounted. Somebody was asking, well, when can we anticipate this vaccine hitting the markets? And what Anthony Fauci said was, he said, well, here's the deal. We can give a vaccine to 50 people and watch them for a year. And if they're doing just great, then maybe the next year we give it to 500 people. And we can watch them for a year. So the 50 people have had it for 2 years and this 500 people have had it for 1 year. And so you would think to yourself, hey, everybody's doing fine. Let's go ahead and release it out there and get everybody inoculated. And here is what Anthony Fauci said in this clip, essentially. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but the sentiment is accurate. He said, but the problem is we don't know what happens in 12 years. And can you imagine if we released something and then found out 12 years later that everything went, and I believe the term he used was haywire? This was a new clip to me. I had not seen this, but this was Anthony Fauci saying 1 year of testing on 50 people is not enough. 2 years on 50 plus 500 people is not enough because we don't know what's going to happen 12 years down the line. He said sometimes it takes a long time for these things to show the danger that's in them. Out of Anthony Fauci's mouth. I believe that clip alone is worth watching this movie. I'm going to find it, and it's going to be an evergreen for me because it's exactly what I was scared of when they first started rolling this thing out. First of all, I knew about the ferret study, and number two, I knew that they always study vaccines for 7 to 12 years. This one they studied for a few months, and Operation Warp Speed. You know what I want to say, but I guess I'll just save it for today. Operation Warp Speed, I pushed it on everybody. You know, one thing that does bug me is everybody says, well, you know, I try to give Trump a pass on this thing. It's just, you don't have to be a virologist to think to yourself, hey, this isn't right. I mean, this disease, we knew by the time the vaccine was out, we knew that this was really a disease only of the elderly and the infirmed, people with comorbidities. It doesn't take a virologist, a scientist, it doesn't take anybody to go, hey, we normally test these things for long periods of time because we don't know the side effects. We don't know the long-term consequences of vaccines within just a couple of months. Trump didn't have to be an immunologist to just think common sense. You can't. We need long-term safety studies on that. And that's, I don't care how much science, I don't care how much red tape you cut. The amount of time to watch one of these things is just time. It can't be rushed. We don't have the science yet. But he went right along with it and to this day is saying it's one of the greatest accomplishments of all mankind because, of course, everything Trump does is the greatest of all time. But it wasn't hard to see that these things could come with some problems. I've got a Substack, a story by somebody. Are they actually disappearing patient records on these things? Now, there is no way really to vet the veracity of what I'm about to read to you when I come back from this break, but kind of feels like the world we live in right now. Because the numbers on VAERS and everywhere else are stacking up. These deaths of young people, unexplained deaths of young people, are stacking up. And we know that the medical community will refuse to look at these things, but eventually, if the numbers get big enough, they're going to have no choice. So maybe they've found a way to try to pretend that it's just not happening and give you nowhere to look for these statistics any longer. It looks like it's starting in Canada. I'll get to that story when we come back.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now, some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
I really try to stay away from kind of unverified things. Even when the sudden death stuff started coming in with the athletes and the videos were going around of athletes collapsing on the field, I didn't really jump onto that immediately because I wanted some context. I wanted numbers because I know, and I told you, one of my fraternity brothers died on the field of play many, many years ago. He was a young, healthy 19-year-old kid. And he died playing flag football. So I know these things happen. So when I saw these things, I said, you know, is this something that we're just looking for, or is it actually worse? Eventually, somebody, I can't remember who put it together, but they started doing statistics. And they said, typically, we see about 70 of these a year, 78, I think the number might have been. This year, we've seen over 700. This was, I guess, last year. It was actually 2021. And so it seemed to me, okay, this seems to be a thing. It's a pretty high-profile incidents of particularly soccer players in Europe that were losing their careers, some of them dying. And I don't like to do unverified things, but I'm going to read this story because maybe we'll find out soon whether or not this is true or if anybody experiences something like this. This is from a group. I don't know what this post is. It's a social media post, but it certainly isn't. I don't think it could be on Twitter or Facebook, but it's some kind of a post. So that's all I know about this, but I'm going to read the story to you. It's just interesting, and it seems to be something that might happen. I can't, as I say, I cannot vouch for the veracity of this thing, but I think it's worth reading because it's kind of bizarre. So I have a coworker who got the cupcake because of pressure at work, and they use the term cupcake, I guess, to try to avoid censorship. What a bizarre world we live in. I have a coworker who got the cupcake because of pressure at work, and I think he was drinking the Kool-Aid. A while after having the cupcake, his wife found him on the kitchen floor. He was rushed to the hospital where he spent 2 days in emergency and one day in the cardiac ward due to a, quote, cardiac event, unquote. He has been diagnosed with myocarditis. When he asked his cardiologist if he should get the second cupcake, the doctor's response was, quote, you may as well, the damage has already been done. That does not surprise me. This goes on. He got it and was bedridden for quite some time before finally returning to work under, quote, modified duty. Today, my coworker dropped a bombshell. On the one-year anniversary of his cardiac event, he had a follow-up appointment with the same cardiologist. After reviewing the test results, the doctor asked a strange question. He asked, quote, what are you doing here? My coworker was surprised and answered, I'm here for my one-year follow-up. The doctor then told my coworker that he wanted to show him something. He turned the screen he was looking at towards my coworker and asked, one-year follow-up to what? There was nothing on the file about my coworker being admitted to the hospital after the cupcake. Do you have any paperwork? The doctor asked. Yes, my coworker responded. I have my discharge papers. Keep them, the doctor advised. Quote, you are the fifth patient of mine whose admission records have been removed. The doctor complained to Alberta Health Services. This is happening in Canada. The doctor complained to Alberta Health Services and is now receiving disciplinary action. Alberta Health Services is deleting records of adverse reactions to the cupcakes. Again, I cannot vouch for the veracity of this particular thing, but it feels truthy. I will say that. That's about it's not really something to hang your hat on. But when you realize that we have story after story of people who have had adverse reactions to these things, be them children or adults, we've had story after story after story, particularly Senator Ron Johnson has had these big panels of people that have been harmed by these shots. And to a person, their doctor said, no, this is just stress. This is all in your mind. They've been telling these patients that they're just crazy. The patients will say, well, nothing's changed in my life. I'm not under any undue stress. Nothing's changed in my life except for one thing, and that was I got the cupcake. And most of them, it took them 3, 4, 5, 6 different medical specialists before somebody finally said, yeah, this looks like it was tied to the shots. So in Alberta, I've made a lot of points over the past year about the fact we get most of our better information from Germany and from England, even some from Canada, where they're actually reporting real stats. Here in the United States, they try to convince us that somehow we're completely genetically different than people in England or Germany or Sweden or anywhere else that's reporting these things, Israel. They tell us, well, we're a completely different species of people. We're not having the bad consequences that are showing up in all these other westernized countries with majority Anglo-Saxon populations. So this feels exactly like something that the medical community would pull. We'll see. But I'm telling you, as you watch, we'll see. We'll see in our schools. I think, luckily, our childhood uptake of these shots has been small. But I'll be very interested to see. The kids are coming down with the worst flus and the RSVs right now. Pay attention to that. And think to yourself, ask your friends, did they get that shot? Because I think that's the next thing we're going to see. The next wave is going to be vaccine-induced. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It's Friday, so we talk about foreign policy stuff about 10:30 every Friday, kind of concentrate some news in there as I try to deprogram the conservative mind from becoming really kind of right. The Republican Party has really tried to, for decades, create just bloodthirsty warmongers within Republican ranks. Within recent years, and I think Donald Trump was a big part of this, people have been walked back from that idea. I think that's the greatest accomplishment of the Trump administration, was that he pointed out the folly of some of these wars, even though while he tried to sell you some new wars. It was disappointing, but Republicans are kind of waking up to these things now, so that's fantastic. Our foreign policy is a disaster. The U.S. State Department, I believe, is probably one of the most evil institutions, and I'm including the Chinese Communist government. The Chinese Communist government is absolutely horrific to the people within China, but it's pretty contained to their own people. They're out bribing people right now to build Belt and Road and things like that, but our State Department is responsible for millions of deaths around the world. And for people that are very pro-life, I think that we've been short-sighted in allowing our tax dollars to go to murder innocent people all around the planet because they don't go along with the power plays of our elite. And that's really what our military has been used for. There's an interesting story. I am your lone conservative talk host that has talked endlessly about people cheering these huge military budgets every time they're mentioned. It's a big applause line for Republicans to talk about how much money they gave to the military, and I have cautioned against that. This story came out this past week. More than 500 retired U.S. military personnel, including scores of generals and admirals, have taken lucrative jobs since 2015, working for foreign governments, mostly in countries known for human rights abuses and political repression. In Saudi Arabia, for example, 15 retired U.S. generals and admirals have worked as paid consultants for the defense ministry since 2016. This is run by Mohammed bin Salman. He is the Saudi butcher, and people like Marine General James L. Jones. He was a national security advisor to Obama. Retired Army General Keith Alexander. He led the NSA under Obama and George W. Bush. And these people have gone to go work for the Saudis and other countries as well. So all that money flushed into the military is now just a golden parachute for these people who are actually training and advising troops of countries that are not good places. This has also been the case for regular enlisted people, too. My understanding is, well, let me go ahead and play this clip first. I heard Dana Loesch the other day talking about the Ukraine conflict, and she said something along the lines of the neocons want a proxy war in Ukraine. But then she said, We don't have one now, but that's what they want. Is she kidding me? What do you call a war where one side, the United States and other Western countries, but led by the United States, we fund, we train, we provide weapons to the Ukrainian government that is fighting against Russia? That's almost the textbook definition of a proxy war, the same way we funded, trained, and gave weapons to the radical jihadists in Syria to try to topple Bashar al-Assad. That is a proxy war. What is taking place right now with our support of Saudi Arabia in Yemen, more on that in a few minutes, is actually a proxy war with Iran. The Iran-backed rebels in Yemen are fighting against the Saudi-backed government of Yemen in another proxy war. This is what we do now. What we've done for a long period of time, but this is what we do. We certainly have a proxy war, and while they will continue to tell you there's no American boots on the ground, everybody knows that's one of the worst kept secrets in the world, is that we've got advisors all through Ukraine. And it's not just advisors. We Americans are taking up the cause. I'll tell you what the payday is for some of these guys.
A U.S. Army veteran and a father of five has been killed in Ukraine. The State Department only confirms that a U.S. citizen has died there, but his sister has identified him as Dane Partridge from Rexburg, Idaho. The 34-year-old had been fighting alongside the Ukrainians since the end of April. Last week, when Partridge and some other men were clearing trenches in eastern Ukraine, they were ambushed by two Russian vehicles. Partridge was shot in the head and died in the hospital Tuesday. His body is on its way back to the U.S., where he'll be buried in a VA cemetery in Idaho.
Now, whether he was sent under some covert program or whether or not he was a mercenary, what I have heard from people who apparently know, these are people like Scott Ritter and I think General, I can't believe I'm spacing on his name, have said that $4,000 a day. $4,000 a day is what people are making to go over and fight alongside the Ukraine, former military guys here in the United States, to go over there and be a mercenary fighter. $4,000 a day, $120,000 a month is what they're being paid to go over there and fight along Ukraine. So the place is supposedly crawling with Americans that are going over there. You've got to ask yourself, who's paying that? Who is paying $4,000 a day for Americans? And I'm sure French are probably taking advantage of this. Any military guys that want to go over there and make bank, if you can survive 2 months over there, you're done for the year and come home and sip margaritas for 10 months. $4,000 a day. You got to wonder who's paying for that. I wanted to bring this up as well. Well, the other thing is, too, I wanted to get a clip from it, but it really wasn't that clippable. If you want to find out what's going on in Ukraine, you really can't watch the mainstream media. It's very interesting. What the picture that the mainstream media is trying to paint is this. They want to have it both ways here. Russia is losing badly. They're being destroyed. Their army is in chaos. They don't know what they're doing. They're incompetent. They're not well trained. All of these things that they're just getting their butts handed to them in Ukraine. That's what they say. At the same time, they say, we need to rally NATO around this cause because Russia is an existential threat to all of Europe, that they're trying to reconstitute the Soviet Union. They tell us they're this hapless military that can't get their stuff together just to take a little bit of territory in Ukraine. They're completely incapable of it. All of their generals are incompetent. At the same time, they're this horrific threat that must be faced down. Now, in my mind, unless I'm missing something, you really can't have it both ways. But we are constantly told that Russia is having their butts handed to them in Ukraine, and apparently they have taken some losses. But there is Judge Napolitano, who was unceremoniously kicked off of Fox News when he started getting a little too truthy for them. Now, he's got a great YouTube channel. It's called Judging Freedom, but he has people like Scott Ritter and, why am I not remembering this guy's name? Trump put him in at the Douglas McGregor. Former lifetime army guy, I believe. I think he was a general And Napolitano has these guys on every couple of days to kind of recount exactly what's going on. They seem very, very honest about what's happening, about the losses and the gains. So if you want to kind of know, I was talking to somebody last night and they said, I don't know what's going on in Ukraine because I don't watch the news. I said, well, if you watch the news, you won't know what's going on either, because there's so much propaganda about what's going on in Ukraine. I've been gone for 2 weeks, so I haven't talked about it, but I guess we are still tiptoeing closer and closer to nuclear conflict. Zelensky has said that he is expecting an attack on some infrastructure any minute now, that the Russians are placing mines, and the Russians are saying this is the Ukrainians setting up a false flag, so we'll see. This is False Flag Friday. We'll see if something like that happens. It is impossible to believe anything. The other thing that's interesting, too, is people talk about how Ukraine is winning this thing. The Russia's got their tail between their legs, heading for the hills, except that all of the infrastructure in Ukraine is being destroyed now. Ukrainians are in the dark. Supply lines are being cut off. They don't have any gas. They don't have any electricity. They don't have any communications in part of Ukraine right now. If Ukraine is really winning this thing so handily, as the media tells us, they've got an interesting way of showing it. It's unfortunate that this is ratcheted up this way, but obviously the gloves are off as far as it comes to Russia, which is, as I say, a real shame. One other thing I wanted to point to, and it really was taking place more when I was gone than it is right now, but it's just very interesting, these Iran protests that were going on. Apparently the Iranian morality police, as it was reported, took some woman into custody. I can't remember what it was. She wasn't wearing a headscarf or something ridiculous like that. And she died in custody of the morality police, and people took to the streets. Now, these things are always kind of hard to decipher, know what's honest and what's not. But it does feel like this is one of those things where either something was set off, this woman was killed in custody. I'm no fan of the Iranian government. If they have a morality police like that, I certainly would not want to live under any of that, and I would wish better freedom for the Iranian people. But you can rest assured that if there was any organic movement, as small as it could be, that we had CIA and Mossad and everybody in there funding these protests. So as you see trouble coming out of Iran, I'd love to see the Iranian government toppled. What would be really nice is if the Iranian government returned back to the government they had in 1953, before the CIA and Operation Ajax overthrew that government. It was a Western-style government run by a popular guy who was educated in Great Britain. That would be fantastic. But the CIA and the oil companies couldn't have that because he nationalized his oil fields and kicked out the big oil companies. And so the CIA went in and took him out so that our Western oil companies could get back in there and take Iranian oil. But if there is a coup or anything like that in Iran, the idea of it being completely organic without a lot of help from the West is going to be very suspect. When I come back, we'll talk about Aaron Mattei. He's a progressive guy, writes for, I believe, the Gray Zone, but he's one of these honest guys on the left. I disagree with him about a whole lot of progressive things, you know, health care for all. I always qualify these things to make people understand, but he's honest about particularly foreign policy things. He was one of these guys, and he says it. He said, I destroyed my own career because he called out Russiagate as a giant hoax. You know, everybody on the left had to accept Russiagate and that Trump was a Russian asset. And people like Aaron Mattei and Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi, all of them left-wing guys, said this Russia thing, there's no basis in truth in this. And the left basically deplatformed them, got rid of them, the left turned on them. So Aaron Mattei was talking about this horrific bombing that's going on in Yemen and how the Biden administration is trying to pretend like they love human rights the same way that Obama did. You know, you remember Obama, the Nobel Peace Prize winning president who dropped more bombs in the Middle East than George W. Bush. And this is how the left gets brought into the warfare state. The left used to be really good on anti-war stuff, many on the left. They've been completely co-opted by the warfare state now, just the same way that the right has been. It's kind of interesting to watch. A lot of the people on the right are turning against the warfare state, and the left is turning towards it. Aaron Mattei kind of explains how they pull this rope-a-dope with you, so we'll get to that clip when we come back. Stick around. know, one of the saddest things about the last 80 years is the constant involvement of U.S. military all around the world in serious bloody battles with no declaration of war. The last time the U.S. declared war was World War II. Not for Korea, not for Vietnam, not for any of the Middle East stuff, none of it. And finally, I don't remember what year it was, it might have been 2018, 2019, Congress finally stood up and said, you can't keep involving us in wars without Congress weighing in. I'm no fan of Congress, but that is how it's supposed to go. You're not supposed to be able, as President of the United States, to just ship our sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters halfway around the world on a whim, just because you and your little cadre of warmongering advisors say so. And when it comes to Yemen, our support for the Saudi brutal bombing and genocide in Yemen, Congress finally stood up. I mean, there's obviously, I mean, we all know we're getting nothing out of that war. It's not even our fight. This is Saudi Arabia's fight. And so Congress stood up and said, hey, we're not going to support and spend taxpayer dollars to help the Saudis bomb the poorest country in the Middle East to oblivion. Trump vetoed that, meaning he wanted to continue to support the Saudis bombing and brutalization of the country of Yemen. It's one of my biggest problems with Donald Trump, and I've got a laundry list of them. But Joe Biden, I'm sure he campaigned on it, and you know the Democrats are always telling you they're for human rights. They take on the brutal dictators around the world. They always tell you they're for peace and love and democracy. And so this thing in Yemen is still going on. Nobody's paying attention to it. This may be my foreign policy equivalent of the bond market. These things are important, but nobody seems to want to talk about them at all. This is just an interesting clip from Aaron Mate about the Biden approach to what's going on in Yemen, because you have to understand how much these politicians lie. They try to tell you they're doing one thing while they're doing another. They use weasel words, much like the CDC and health authorities have used. We hope, we think, we surmise, we predict, and they call that science. We hope that this is going to stop transmission. Listen to us, because we know the science. Hope is not science. But they use weasel words, a lot of them in foreign policy, too. And I thought Aaron Mate did a good job of explaining what the Biden administration is currently doing when it comes to Yemen.
We saw the heartwarming scene of John Brennan congratulating the Biden administration for supposedly ending aid to Saudi Arabia's hostilities in Yemen. Is that a thing to actually be applauded? Or I saw you tweeting about that as well.
Yes. Well, it's certainly better than what Trump did. At the last minute, Pompeo designated Ansar Allah, the Houthis, a terrorist organization, which was basically a death sentence.
And there's Trump appointing Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. This warmongering pig is certainly in that laundry list of Trump's horrific, horrific mistakes
for the vast majority of Yemenis, because they live under territory controlled by the Houthis. And so designating them a terrorist organization would have basically cut off aid to all those areas, on top of the fact that the country is already under a medieval siege imposed by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. So Biden immediately reversed that, which is good. And he appointed an envoy, and he said that we are going to end support for the Saudi war in Yemen. But you have to look at his words carefully, because he said we're going to end support for offensive offensive Saudi operations in Yemen. And he also said he didn't say we're going to suspend arms sales. He said we're going to suspend relevant arms sales. Relevant arms sales.
But not irrelevant ones?
Exactly. So these guys are slick. This is how the Obama-Biden camp does it. They're really good at pretending that they're doing something humane while adding these qualifiers that, if you look at the details, amount to basically continuing the same policy or modifying the same policy to make it slightly less murderous, but really still murderous. And that's the thing. Actually, if you look at Biden's language, it's very similar to the language that Obama used when he greenlit the Saudi invasion of Yemen back in 2015. Remember, it wasn't Trump that started the Yemen war. It was Obama. The Saudis came to the Obama White House. There was really no debate inside the White House. Everybody was on board. They authorized it. And Obama, when he announced his support, he talked about it being defensive for Saudi Arabia, that Saudi Arabia needed to defend its territorial integrity.
And another thing that Obama said, I mean, just think about this, how depraved this is. This is the Nobel Peace Prize winning Obama. One of the things Obama said when this catastrophic attack on the Yemeni people, who have done nothing to anybody in the United States. Of course, anybody going to sleep at night, say in your prayers, and please keep us safe from those Yemenis. Of course not. No one even thinks about this. Most people don't even know this war is going on. But one of the things that Obama said, as just tens of thousands of Yemenis have died, there was a huge cholera outbreak there. It was known to be the biggest humanitarian crisis on the face of the earth. Obama said he had to placate the Saudis. Nah, I don't want to cause any problems. So we're just going to let them murder just tens of thousands of people. These are people on the left who pretend to be all peace and love and human rights. How many times are they talking about human rights, equality, inclusion, while they are actually participating in just murdering thousands and thousands of people a world away? But like I say, most Americans don't know anything about it.
Biden is now using the same language that Obama used when he authorized this mass murder campaign back in 2015. It's still better than Trump and Pompeo because they were just like unfettered support for the Saudi genocide. So it's a good thing. But there, if you look at the language, they've left it qualified enough that they could still continue to provide key support, but just call it defensive. And they could still sell Saudi Arabia arms, but just call it relevant, you know, as opposed to irrelevant arms sales.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. All of these wars, whether it's Trump, Obama, Biden, it's about selling weapons. The Ukraine war, the defense contractors are not going to let them extract themselves. And American people are the only ones who could actually stop these things from happening. But as I say, people don't even really know this stuff is going on for the most part. I'll be right back. All right, we're about to finish up another week here. This one went by pretty quick, but we finish every Friday the same way every week with chronicling the world's descent into madness on this week on the Crazy Train. One of the biggest stories of the week was the what went viral was a Twitter feed from a woman who got sandwiched between two morbidly obese people on a plane. I thought this was just kind of interesting. It certainly felt a little fat shamey to me, but it's a complaint that is very legitimate. It's interesting. I saw a lot of people pointing out that if you have a bag that you're taking on a plane and it's 5 pounds overweight, you get like a $75 charge for an overweight bag, yet somebody can weigh 2 to 3 times the amount of another person and pay the same for a ticket. I guess I got to get on that Twitters. I remember I was coming back from Denver the last time. I got into my flight from Charlotte back to Jackson. And I remember I was walking onto the flight and, you know, you're looking at your ticket. You're looking at the seat numbers. And I see I've got a window seat. And there's two very, very large people. It's 3 seats next to each other. And the first 2 seats, I wasn't like this woman sandwiched between 2 people. But I had the window seat and the 2 very large people were encroaching on my seat already. And the most amazing thing to me was, now I'm a vertically challenged, about 155 pounds. That's the size of me that you don't get to see. I'm in an audio format here, but I ain't a big guy. And I remember when I approached that and I looked at them and we made eye contact, you should have seen the disgust in their face when they realized I was about to take that little bit of extra room that was left there right by the window. So I feel the woman's pain. Part of this crazy train that I've started, I didn't really mean to, it just started to happen, is that Mississippi does not make the headlines very often, but it seems like we're getting a little bit more national attention these days than we used to. The first one was for no drinking water or flushable potable water in Jackson. The next one was the welfare scam, the welfare theft. This was on the news last time I think I was here. Well, Mississippi made the news again. And I guess this is how we're going to be starting these segments from now on.
This morning, police and the Mississippi Department of Health were investigating these disturbing videos. A daycare worker in a spooky Halloween mask screaming at and appearing to intentionally scare young children. In one clip, an employee appears to be telling the woman in the mask which 2- and 3-year-olds have been bad.
Are you being bad?
This clearly terrifying the two-year-old being chased and grabbed. His mother, Caitlin, saying he hasn't been quite the same since.
It's hard as a parent to console something that's happening in their mind and in their brain. It's not something you can physically help with.
So this was just this certainly made the rounds here in Mississippi and apparently made the national news as well. This is one of those things that I look at. I can see almost both sides of this. This is a stupid thing to do. But I got to tell you, if scaring any kids is a bad thing, I was a pretty bad parent. I probably didn't go to the extremes of this daycare worker, but I love to jump out from behind things when my kids, maybe not when they were two, but this was kind of a part of my parenting style for a while there. I had some COVID things, but we've mostly covered the insanity in COVID. Nothing more crazy than trying to add these shots to the childhood schedule, but it may be the least of our concerns if this happens.
An overseas outbreak of Ebola has officials here in the United States on high alert. Major U.S. airports this week will begin screening all travelers from the East African nation of Uganda for Ebola. Health officials are concerned because there is no vaccine for the strain of the virus spreading in that country.
Not yet.
You may recall the U.S. implemented Ebola screening procedures during a global outbreak back in 2014.
Oh, goody. Oh, goody. How long before the cotton swabs start going up your nose that all we need is a couple of Ebola cases in this country? And you can only imagine how we'll freak out about that. This was basically just this is a tragic story. This is a warning sign for this week on the crazy train as they try to convince you that your children are all crazy.
A new recommendation calls for children as young as 8 to be screened for anxiety. An independent panel of health experts says the screening should be done during routine doctor's visits. They say the aim is not to diagnose a child with anxiety, but it's to identify those who need support.
Yeah. They're coming for your children. I've told you, if you've got kids, you really need to run as fast as you can away from the medical community. This is Boston Children's Clinic.
So most of the patients that we have in the GEMS clinic actually know their gender, usually around the age of puberty. But a good portion of children do know as early as seemingly from the womb. And they will usually express their gender identity as very young children. Some as soon as they can talk, they might say phrases such as, I'm a girl, or I'm a boy, or I'm going to be a woman, or I'm going to be a mom. Kids know very, very early. So in the GEMS clinic, we see a variety of young children all the way down to ages 2 and 3, and usually up to the ages of 9. When they come into the clinic, they'll see one of our psychologists, and we'll be talking to them about their gender. We'll be talking to their family about how to best support that child and how to make sure that that child has the space and support to explore their gender and do well throughout their development. And we'll be answering any parent questions. A lot of parents do have questions, and so we answer those questions. The biggest piece of advice I give parents who are coming through the gender clinic at Boston Children's Hospital is to just be supportive. Sometimes you might not understand. Sometimes you feel like you don't know the terms, or you don't kind of get exactly what the child means when they say that they might be this gender. But the biggest thing you can do is just love your child and support them and just allow them to express themselves.
Holy cow. That's Boston Children's Hospital. I got people, kids as young as what'd she say, 4 years old? You just got to support. Don't you dare get in the way of your 4-year old making a life altering decision. We have really lost the plot. I usually try to do funny clips on this show, but when it just comes, I'm just documenting the descent into madness, and that certainly is a big part of it. Joe Biden, he always plays a prominent piece in all these. It was kind of funny to listen to this one, as Joe Biden struggled to try to figure out a Zoom call.
I can't see in the front there. I think. And I actually wish I could be there with you in person. You know, I mean it. You know, and I've had. And by the way, again, to ad lib a second here, you're also what people don't realize. You're the same folks who are there holding the boot in the corner to raise money for the people who just lost their home. Not a joke. That's what you do.
Not a joke.
That's what you do. You're the ones who line the little league fields. You're the one. You're just anyway. Your incredible group of individuals, you know, in Delaware.
Oh, just such inspiring words. Such inspiring words from Joe Biden. He's just an everyman, isn't he? He just knows. You guys are the ones holding up the boot, taking up cash. This one certainly made the rounds. This might be an old one, but it's, I don't know, I can't resist playing it.
Let me start off with two words. Made in America. Made in America.
I mean, don't you, before you applaud, don't you just for just a split second at least go, what? That's three words. What? Wait, what? Who is this? Oh, Morning Joe. It seems like things are heating up on Hunter Biden. Maybe there's going to be some action taken on Hunter Biden, but we've been down that path so many times. We just thought, speaking of that, how's that Durham investigation going? I was so assured that Durham was really going to finally break apart. Apparently there's some case was dismissed that he brought now. I don't like to be the I told you so guy, but, you know, placing faith in John Durham during a Biden regime was going to break apart the deep state. I'm hesitant. Hunter Biden, this was Morning Joe. Basically, there's nothing to see here. You'd be surprised to find out that MSNBC says everything that Hunter Biden did was perfectly legal.
The feds are pretty confident they have an open and shut case against him. Is that what you're hearing?
That's the reporting. Actually, we at NBC News, we tried very hard to talk to people familiar with the case who would neither confirm nor deny this Post report. But as you know, Joe, I mean, tax cases are not all that difficult. He paid a $2 million tax bill last year, so he was in arrears on his taxes. The question with those cases is always, when does it become criminal tax evasion? And there's a lot of prosecutorial discretion about that. There's a lot of people who evade taxes who are never prosecuted criminally. So that's going to be a big issue in this case. In terms of like corruption, conflict of interest, we've never heard a hint that there were potential criminal charges there, because Hunter Biden wasn't an office holder. It was perfectly legal for him to take money from foreign governments as long as he wasn't inappropriately giving them information from his family or something. There's no hint of that.
No.
As bad as it looks, we should all acknowledge it looked terrible. He did this while his father was vice president and in charge of Ukraine issues, and he was taking $50,000 a month from that energy company, but no hint that he was ever going to be charged on that count. But again, yes. The tax charges, it's a fairly simple proposition. But now it all comes down to, what is this U.S. attorney in Delaware who was appointed by Donald Trump? What is he going to decide on this case?
You know, they're probably right. They're probably right. You know, our Congress critters, they leave a lot of things that aren't exactly illegal. Oh, it might look bad if they get caught, but there's absolutely no repercussions to it whatsoever. No, Hunter Biden got that $50,000 a month job strictly on the merits, on his great experience in the energy markets, of which there is no recorded documentation. Christy Whitmer, she's the governor of, Michigan? One of the worst COVIDiots out there. She's in a race right now for the governor, I guess, in these midterm elections, and I just thought this was kind of funny.
Whitmer fiercely defended her actions during her term.
You're going to hear a lot of divisive rhetoric and a focus on the past from my opponent.
Yeah, a focus on the past. What does that mean? Her record. She does not want anybody focusing on what she's done. Let's just focus on the future. Let's try not to look at anything that I've been doing while I've been in office. When I come back, I always have my notes segmented into Mississippi. And that's my new entry now. And then COVID, and then Biden, and then the social justice warriors. They're always good for a few entertaining clips. We'll get to those when we come back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. I always leave you with my one great piece of advice during the course of the week, and that is make sure this weekend that you are looking for a place to go out to eat, you check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt. They're at 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. 10 and 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato. The gelato is so popular up there. They've also got beer and wine. It's a great place to take a family, great place to go check out a game. They got TVs all over the place. You want to go check out a game with the guys or with a date or with anybody, make sure that you download their app. You're going to get all kinds of goodies. If you download their app, you'll get points when you eat there. You can also order on the app. You can kind of store your favorite order for your family and just hit a button and the food is ready for you. You can also get food delivered to you takeabreakdeliveries.com is the local one, and then I think they also use Grubhub, or I can't remember which one they use. Anyway, you can find them on some of the delivery platforms. It's fantastic food. This is a locally owned, veteran-owned business right up there in Gluckstadt. Struggled through COVID, struggled through the labor problems, keeps on trucking with fantastic food. So check them out. That is Your Pie. Express your inner pizza this weekend. All right, we are not done trying to destroy the lives of our children and take everything fun away from them as we have embarked upon for the last couple of years.
This morning, parents speaking out as school districts across the country opt to cancel Halloween celebrations.
I feel like it's just crossing the line, and it's just, where does it end? So next, people are going to be offended by pumpkins. So we're going to take away pumpkins or jack-o'-lanterns or pumpkin carving.
Lower Merion School District in Pennsylvania ending the Halloween tradition after more than 50 years, in part because of safety concerns.
Yep, got to keep those kids safe. Can't let them do anything that might be fun. No, there is no level of acceptable risk or risk of to safety or personal offense. Canceling Halloween all over the place. This was a kind of funny one. I kind of understood this one.
A fifth grade teacher in Indiana has been detained by police after it was discovered that she had a kill list that included her own students and school staff members. 25-year-old teacher Angelica Casarquillo Torres worked at St. Stanislaus School in East Chicago, Indiana. Police officers spoke with the principal and the assistant principal, who claimed that the teacher allegedly told a fifth grade student about her kill list and informed the student that he or she was on the bottom of that list. Police say the student told a counselor about the list, and the teacher was immediately taken to the principal's office. She allegedly admitted to the existence of the list. Police say the principal then advised the teacher to leave and not return to school pending an investigation. The East Chicago Police Department says they were informed of the situation roughly 4 hours after the teacher was allowed to leave the school and go home, and they were then able to obtain an emergency detention order to arrest the teacher.
So I got to tell you, I mean, I kind of understand that. I think I would have been on that list, particularly in high school. We had one algebra teacher, Mr. Thornton. I sat in the very back of my algebra class, and I remember I used to take my watch, and the sun would come in through the windows there at Murrah High School, and I'd be able to catch, you know how you can direct that little reflective dot? I'd be able to catch that on my watch. I'd put my arm up in the windowsill very innocently, and I would basically spend my entire senior year of algebra class projecting this dot right into the middle of Mr. Thornton's head. It was pretty popular with my classmates, not so much with my teacher. I did a lot of teacher hazing, all good-natured fun back in the day. But a kill list, I would imagine I would have been on there somewhere. The Green Weenies, they're out there making waves. Let's see what they're up to. This is a story from New Zealand. They're going to save the planet.
Next, a new proposal to tax cows in a very different way to fight climate change.
New Zealand's government wants to put a tax on cow burping and other bodily functions. It would be a tax on the greenhouse gases that farm animals produce. Supporters say farmers could make the money back by charging more for products.
There you go. That's what you want to hear during inflation. They're going to tax cow farts and burps and then just tack on that price at the checkout. I've talked a little bit about this. Hurricane Ian exposed a tiny weakness in this push towards all electric.
In Hurricane Ian's aftermath, electric vehicles bursting into flames spontaneously after being damaged in floodwaters. Car batteries catching fire, prompting an urgent new warning from the state.
Is the theory that when salt water interacts with these EV batteries, they turn into something of a time bomb?
Well, we just can assume that that's contributing to it, because all these are storm-damaged vehicles that were flooded.
It's a real concern among firefighters, those fires proving very difficult to put out.
So how much water would you put on a typical gas-powered car?
Sometimes we just take a tank of water on the engine, around 750 to 1,000 gallons.
How much on something
these,
like this?
You know, we're doing 8,000-plus gallons of water, just constant flow, trying to cool them down and stop the battery.
So like 10 to 12 times the amount of water is required to put a car out like this?
Easily.
An EV?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. So these cars were catching on fire spontaneously in the floodwaters in Florida. But, you know, it took them 10 times as much water to put out an electric car fire as a regular car fire. But, you know, eventually they do get it put out, and then it gets towed away, and then this happens.
Tim Baker towed this Tesla to his lot after firefighters put it out.
I went back in my office, got a drink, sat down on the couch, and one of my employees yelled, "Hey, there's a fire."
Baker had to push the car out into the street.
Another eventful day.
And you can see the car still on skids, pumping smoke, sputtering into flames. They had to plunk it in the drainage ditch.
There are an increasing number of tow truck drivers and companies who are just refusing to tow these vehicles.
Yeah, pretty much so.
Why
I mean, they're
that?
Very dangerous cars to tow. They have a potential to catch fire at pretty much any time.
So there's that. I mean, I'd kind of like to own. I've heard a lot of good things about the electric Porsche. I'd like to drive one, but they just have a habit of, I don't know, catching on fire.
And storing flooded EVs is increasingly a problem.
This field has been specifically designated for electric vehicles that have been flooded out by Hurricane Ian. Every single one of them has to be spaced 50 feet apart in case they spontaneously burst into flames. The traditional cars in this lot, parked on the other side, they can be parked close together.
Just another one of these stories when the solution is worse than the condition that they're trying to address. And then this is a fun one from up in Chicago.
In the past, Chicago has released 1,000 feral cats onto the streets to try to address its rat problem. But given that the city is still ranked rattiest in the U.S., it may have to consider more strategies.
Chicago. They've got a rat problem in there. So apparently this is not new. I guess every year when Chicago realizes this rat problem is getting, they release feral cats to deal with the rats. There's another story. I think New York is finding these monstrous rats in New York. New York is, you know, you want to talk about a lot of similarities to the 70s with stagflation and high inflation and all these different things that are going on, oil and energy problems. The rats and filth of New York City is following right along with that trend. That's all the time I've got. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter.